And the show is indeed live and local. I'm Kevin Kelly, your host. We air each weekday from 12 to 1. And it's your connection to local music and more. And on the program, we have two guests coming up later. J. Scott Ferguson is director of the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Chorale, who are about to embark on a tour across the country with a kickoff concert on Saturday night in Peoria. My first guest is a very celebrated dancer and choreographer, Mark Morris of the Mark Morris Dance Group, who are in their 10th consecutive year of residency at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. They're giving concerts tomorrow and Saturday night at the Krannert Center. Both of those start at 7:30. And we'll be very pleased to welcome Mr. Morris in a matter of moments. This is one of the pieces that will be heard, played live on these concerts. And we'll talk about why played live and why this music in just a few moments. It's live and local on FM 90.9. That is one of my all-time favorite pieces of chamber music. It's the opening movement of the Piano Quintet, Opus 44 by Robert Schumann, played by an ensemble of musicians that has performed for our guest on this portion of Live and Local, who is Mark Morris of the Mark Morris Dance Group, and he's joined by Nancy Umanoff. One of the others, who is the executive director of the dance group, and they're in residency this week at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana, and the concerts are Friday and Saturday night at 7:30, and they're doing another public event, which we'll talk about briefly, on Saturday morning. So, Mr. Morris, first of all, thank you very much for coming in on the show today.
Thank you.
I know that you like to talk to your audiences, because I know you regularly do talkbacks, as we call them, after the performances, and those are always a highlight, I think, for viewers, listeners, and so on.
Right.
And I know you've been asked this question many times before, but the one that interests me especially is, why do you insist on live music? And what's the inspiration once it's live?
Well, it used to be called music before there was a need to call it live music. You know, like the acoustic guitar wasn't needed until there was an electric guitar. Well, you see, I think that the reason that most people dance, most cultures dance, most individuals dance is because of music, with a few exceptions in the higher reaches of modern dance. people have always responded to rhythm and to music and to singing together and to participating in dancing. So I think that most music derives from the impulse to dance, maybe not vice versa. I think ancient music, like rock and stick music, was built in order to make dancing happen.
Stick music.
Yeah, you know, when you beat a stick with a rock or vice versa.
Got it.
So prehistoric.
So not the modern rock music.
No.
Which isn't ultimately all that different.
Actual rock, stone rock. Anyway, of course there's musics that are made specifically electronically, something that was created in order to be reproduced over speakers. That's fine. That's not my specialty. I use living musicians because there's nothing like them. How about that? So I like everybody in the room, the audience, the musicians, the dancers, the crew, to be alive to the second and to the moment of transmission of information. So I think it's more expensive, it's more time-consuming, it's more difficult, there are more people to deal with, and it's so, so worth it. It makes every moment of a live performance that much liver. So it'll never happen again. It's never exactly the same, although everyone is working from, you know, the text. They're not straying from the text of the music or the dance, but every millisecond, everyone is making live decisions in the exact room where the show is happening.
Because I imagine if it were, obviously not dead music, but recorded music, mm-hmm. it's that there's some element of sameness to, obviously the music is absolutely identical every time you play mm-hmm. the recording, but at some level I imagine the dancing has will have an element of sameness to it. Because the music doesn't change.
Well, I think there's a certain...
From performance to performance.
Right. There's a certain kind of deadening or numbing that happens. You know, if everybody... I use the word record for recorded music. I'm sorry, I'm old-fashioned. But everyone who owns that record knows exactly how many seconds are between the tracks. And it's like, of course, it becomes part of the music. And although I don't like people... the musicians to stop and tune and fool around between movements. We keep it going all the way through the piece. There's a tension that happens in the silences between movements. And so everyone steps off into the unknown downbeat of the next movement because we trust each other and rehearsed enough. So it's not that the dancing is accompanying the music or vice versa. What I want is that we're all after the same thing, the same effect, the same sort of interpretation.
In the case of the Schumann music we just played, of course, that's what we call chamber music. Mm-hmm. And I just had a pair of conversations with two performers who were at the Kranitz Center last night, mm-hmm. violinist Stefan Milenkovic and pianist Rohan de Silva. And we both of them talked about the interplay between very good friends who know each other very well and who know each other's art very well, so mm-hmm. that there's an element of spontaneity to every performance and they almost don't have to rehearse. But it's that live interaction with each other. So
absolutely.
It sounds to me like between the dance and the performers, that's an element of chamber work right there.
It absolutely is. It's an exact parallel. And even when we work with big orchestras, which we do, you know, some of the bigger pieces, I don't travel with a full orchestra myself, but certainly with a conductor and singers. It's the same thing, that we work so closely together that, and my dancers, because we only ever work with living music, including in the studio. I don't use recordings. I have a pianist. And so everyone knows the music very, very well. Very often the dancers know it better than the orchestra, who are, you know, playing all sorts of repertory and are joining us for those shows. So it's a very interesting, spontaneous, not exactly improvised, but very much alive every single show.
And totally open-ended question here. How do you go about choosing music that you think will somehow make good dance music?
Well, let's see. I have to like it. It has to be, unless it's something for a very specific project that I'm looking for, a particular dramatic idea, or it's meant to be cheap or, you know, funny music on purpose for a piece, I usually go with pieces that have some sort of a hook, some kind of a surprise in instrumentation or in phrase length or in, you know, a surprise modulation or something. But you need to be able to listen to a piece of music and work with it really thousands of times, not hundreds. The amount of time it takes to study and, you know, really learn a score, then get a dance put with it, which takes some weeks or months, and then to perform something. We have pieces in our repertory that we've been dancing for 20 years. So if you're sick of the music after a couple weeks, that's a problem. So, and I also, I do a lot of chamber music because of the pragmatic notion of going on tour with a bunch of people.
You know, then you can take your people.
That's right, exactly. The Mark Morris Dance Group Music Ensemble. So which is a roster that rotates depending on the size of the pieces that we're doing. But, you know, it works great.
What interested you about the Schumann Quintet that we just heard a sample of?
Well, one reason is that it is one of the best known pieces of chamber music ever. It's imagined to be, I don't disagree with this, the first real piano quintet. And it's written with a gigantic piano part in it. It's basically a piano concerto. The piano never stops playing. And it's one of the great pieces of chamber music. It has an incredible, beautiful structure that revealed itself to me through studying it to be composed of so few ideas, which sounds insulting, but it's really, they're four pitch sequences that Schumann then miraculously reforms over and over without it getting boring, but it getting more thrilling as the piece goes along. So it's very, I don't know if it's it's danceable. It makes you want to dance, which is one key trigger that a piece of music provides for me when I'm looking for something.
I wasn't going to do this, but since you just said that, I'm going to play just a little bit more of that. The Scherzo movement, the third movement.
Oh, great.
Would you be able to describe at all the action as we play this?
No.
Fine.
I can tell you, I hear this as a tarantella, and I can tell you that it's in two teams, seven men in one team and seven women in another, and that's all I can say because it's radio. I could say like right, left, leap, leap, leap or something if that helps, but you have to come and see the show. That's why I'm here.
Course,
come on.
Of course. Well, this is always just a teaser in any
event. Okay.
But actually the tarantella thing and the right, left, leap, leap, but that'll do. Let's see how this goes here. And this is the same ensemble playing the third movement of Robert Schumann's E-flat piano quintet here on Live and Local with Mark Morris on FM 90.9. Okay, so I'm now trying to picture right, left, leap, leap, or whatever the quick thing. But the tarantella, which is this rather fast, whipped up, I mean, in some cultures, that's supposed to be a dance of death.
Yeah, we don't know if that's really where the word comes from, but it's a good idea.
Having
the
something
spider.
To do with tarantula.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I think that might be pretend, but it's a good story.
And you call the piece, is it V or 5?
Yes.
Explain.
It's whatever you want. It's spelled capital V, and or you can pronounce it 5. It's a quintet. There are V patterns, like birds fly in V patterns. And I don't know. It's all in the whole dance is done with groups of 7 people. And so to make sure that they all fit across the stage, I made it either a concave or a convex V. From the audience, and it's all of these permutations. It allows me to move around in the score and deal with the repeats in the score, which are their big repeats, by just inverting the V and changing a few elements so that the different teams have different things to do during full repeats of lots of pages of music.
So I assume then that any music that you choose is going to help to impose the structure on the dance.
Yes, definitely. Well, I figure, or don't use the music. I figure you should know what you're doing, or, you know, don't do it. But I'm old-fashioned that way.
Well, that seems like a fairly reasonable
approach. Yeah, it does to me, yeah.
A fairly reasonable approach. We're talking with Mark Morris of the Mark Morris Dance Group here on Live and Local. The company is in town at the University of Illinois, specifically the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, for their 10th consecutive residency, which is quite something, performing tomorrow night and Saturday night at 7:30 at the center. What I've noticed that you've got some other favorite venues that you return to with regularity. What appeals to you about a venue that makes you go back, and maybe specifically the Krannert Center?
Well, the Krannert Center is actually, to me, pronounced Mike Ross, and he's been bringing us here since forever.
He's the director of the Krannert Center.
Yeah, and he... he's so passionately interested in music, as I am, and he's, through the university, has really helped us a great deal. We perform here more frequently than we do a lot of other places. And so the Krannert Center has been involved in co-producing a lot of the big works that we've done. We come here every year and do a lot of work performing and outreach projects. We go to... Berkeley, California, Cal Performances, in Berkeley. We perform in Boston every year. We perform in London very frequently, in Chicago and New York. A lot of places we go to do the big pieces and occasionally chamber shows. But the clue is we go where we're brought. You know, we don't, it would be great to just you know, say, let's go someplace, let's go to the Bahamas and do a 2-week run of shows with, like, you know, one a day or something. But what we do is go to where people bring us. We get to develop, if there is such a thing as developing an audience, people who see the work more than once, and that's extremely valuable. Someplace like the Kraner Center, we've been performing here, well, 10 times in a row. And people come to the shows, and then I like to think they come back and see something else that we're capable of doing. So it's really, it becomes a wonderful sort of community relationship between us, the theater, and the community at large.
So it's really the people more than specifically the physical venue.
Exactly, yeah. No, because we, you know, we perform in all sorts of different theaters. We spend a lot of our job time rearranging the spacing and, you know, accommodating the acoustics. And, you know, that's what we do when we get to a place and work in the theater, that we do all day trying, it's the job. We reshape the piece to fit the physical theater. And of course, when we come someplace like this very frequently, we fall into it very easily. So it's always a relief, and it's sort of a homecoming to be here.
We're going to hear kind of the equivalent movement in just a few minutes of another piece that's on this particular program, from one scherzo to another, that mm-hmm. bear no resemblance to each other whatsoever. But it kind of made me think, partly as you were talking about right, left, leap, leap, and whatnot, looking over your roster of dancers, I noticed that they come from by no means one kind of dance. It's not, you know, like they all come from quote-unquote modern dance or mm-hmm. ballet, but there's tap and there's jazz dance and there's all kinds of different backgrounds and combining together.
Right.
Do you deliberately look to have a mix of dancers, or what do you look for and what do they all bring?
Well, I certainly look for people who are excellent, intelligent, musical, rhythmic, etc., dancers. And, of course, we need to be able to get along on the road. So we're about 18 dancers. Everyone comes from I don't know where. I find out later after I hire them. So, you know, and I have auditions of, you know, 500 or 600 people show up, and we winnow it down. And I hire people as apprentices in 6-month increments. They perform with us and see how it goes, and then they join the company. So, you know, I work with adults. I think the youngest dancer is probably 25 years old, up to 40-something. And so, you know, everyone has different skills. They all came from different places for different reasons. They all end up in New York, of course. But, you know, it's my education as a dancer. Of course, I studied classical ballet and I studied various modern dance techniques. But I started with Spanish dance, flamenco, jota. I did a great deal of folk dancing. I'm an expert at Croatian folk dancing. I know a lot of these things. I'm a big fan of Indian classical dance. And my company and my school reflect my interests, which is, my interest is dance itself. I'm not as sort of orthodox about what I need from people. They just have to be really great and versatile and friendly a little bit.
And I want to come to the school in a few minutes, because mm-hmm. You do a lot. The reason we call them residencies is that you do more than just present a couple of concerts here.
Right.
And Nancy Yumanoff, your executive director, is with us here as well to talk about that a little bit. Before we ask you anything about this next piece, I want to play some of it, because otherwise it won't mean anything to the audience, because it's a very interesting piece. You have a work by Charles Ives providing the music for your dance called Empire Garden, and this is the kind of the scherzo movement. It's the second movement with the interesting initials TSIAJ, which was Ives's title, and here performed by your ensemble on Live and Local. Music for the Mark Morris Dance Group. That piece just has all of the hallmarks of Charles Ives' music, a whole lot of craziness, some very familiar American hymns almost invariably, and then right where we just stopped, something you don't ever expect at all. unless you're Charles Ives.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick this piece?
Oh, well, let's see. I was, I've done a lot of work with Yo-Yo Ma and his friend and partner, Emmanuel Axe. I've worked with both of them. And we decided that we should do something all together. So for the Tanglewood Festival in Massachusetts and for Mostly Mozart in New York, we did two pieces, one, the Beethoven cello sonata, which is coming up, and then this piano trio of Charles Ives, which I wanted to do. And, we added a violin, and Colin Jacobson was the violinist in the first performances. And it's a piece that I love. I imagine that a lot of people would think it can't be danced to, but of course that's why I'm here. And I wanted to do a piece that was less familiar to them. You know, they've played every piece of chamber music, in the repertoire of those instruments. And they'd both played the piece, all three of them had played the piece, but not for a long time and not really together. So I wanted something that was challenging, which this is. It's an extremely complicated and frustrating piece to play with great results. It's a thrilling sort of culmination. Since then, of course, I do it with my own musicians, the music ensemble, and it's a piece that somehow turned out to be kind of a gorgeous, big company dance. It's pretty much for everybody in the company, and it's called Empire Garden for no reason except that that's what every Sichuan restaurant in the country is named. I thought it would be a good name for a dance.
Or at least some kind. We have a rainbow garden in Champaign.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a rainbow garden. But the garden is in there as well.
Yeah.
While we were playing that,
yeah,
you commented that the dancers can just about sing every line. And I said, well, what about the very opening part, which is totally spastic and so
yeah,
on?
Yeah, well, they kind of do a glissando. They kind of do a slide, and that works. But really, one thing is that musicians still get to read a score during a performance if they need to, which they mostly need to. A piece like that, you certainly do. But dancers, having learned the piece in the studio with piano accompaniment, know the score bar by bar and can recognize voices in the texture of the music that a first-time listener or a casual listener wouldn't even recognize. So the dancers, since there are many tunes going on at the same time in this piece, the dancers are doing several dances at the same time, and you have to be able to find My Old Kentucky Home in there, or this sort of cow noise rhythm, or the piano, which is doing a completely different thing. So the dancers, depending on where they are in the piece, I can say, let's start from here, where we're trying to find bar numbers for the musicians, and the dancers sing it, and they're right. It may not sound gorgeous, but, they know it inside out.
Well, I was going to ask, what are the particular challenges for the dancers? But in a way, they are free of the bar lines and the notes themselves, and they're going to have not the same challenges that the players are going to have.
Mm-hmm.
But so what are the challenges for the dancers for a piece like that?
Well, the challenge of a dancer is dancing, first of all. And, to be able to, it's like if the violin misses an entrance, the dancers know it and remember it after the show, so they're fully exposed. Dancers, this is a terrible thing to say, but there's no way dancers can make fools out of musicians during a performance. The opposite can happen. If a musician, drops a page or a repeat or something, we're screwed on stage. But that doesn't happen. So, you just sort of glower at the people playing the music and you get back together. But it's a very, very interesting thing because the dancers, even though a lot of them can't read music, they know it because you know what's next because you learned it in that sequence, and there's no other choice as to what to do next. I get that question a lot from people. How do you know what to do next? You learn it. It's not even just memorization. It's a corporeal sort of sensation. You learn it. The term muscle memory, which I don't like that much, is really can be applied there. So that's why dancers very often have such a really specific and distinct sense of tempo that musicians do or not, depending on the musician. But it's different sitting in a chair and playing the piccolo than it is throwing your whole body weight around. So, it's a very interesting relationship between the dancing and the music in memorization, in learning, in rhythm, in coordination. It's wonderful.
The other piece that you're doing on the show is one that we will just tease in a little bit by playing some of the music. As you indicated, it's from one of Beethoven's several sonatas for cello and piano, and you're calling the piece, I've Lost My Page.
Visitation.
And an explanation or none?
Well, let's say that there's a single person, one of two dancers who do the piece, a single person, a solo person, in relationship to a group of people that's four or eight strong. And the visitation, I don't know if it's the single visiting the group or the group visiting the single. It's a little bit mysterious and very spontaneous seeming. So I don't know. Explain the title. You can call a dance anything. I don't like Untitled very much, but no, Visitation seemed to say what the dance looked like after it was done.
And we'll hear a little bit what it sounds like right as we say goodbye. But before we do that, I wanted to bring your executive director into the conversation here a little bit, Nancy Umanoff. And both of you, please chime in here. As I said earlier, you do a residency, meaning that you not only give the performances, which, by the way, are Friday and Saturday night at the Krannert Center, the Mark Morris Dance Group, but you also do some public and non-public events having to do with just the general approach to outreach. But, for example, the public one is storytelling, Saturday morning, 10:30 at Champaign Public Library. What's the reason for the outreach? What's the belief behind it? What are sort of the range of activities you sometimes will do, whether they're here or elsewhere?
Community program is a big part of the Mark Morris Dance Group, and we do a lot of outreach here, and Krannert Center is a great partner for helping make connections and partnerships within the community. So we do a lot of work within the dance department and the opera department and the campus as a whole, but we also work with the Boys and Girls Club, some of the local school districts. We're working with a local Parkinson's Foundation, where we have an ongoing program that extends well beyond our week here. And this year we're doing, for the first time, a storytelling and movement workshop at the library. And that's actually going to be the reading of a dance book. And the background and the reason for...
A dance book.
A book about dance.
About
I'm
dance,
not sure
okay.
what has been selected, but it will be a dance story of some sort. But outreach in general is important to us. I think we are very concerned about deepening the engagement, making greater connections to make a more fulfilling experience for the audience. If you think about baseball fans, you know, you don't suddenly go to a baseball game and really understand it and appreciate it if you haven't played it as a child or seen a game as a child. So it's really trying to give exposure to a broader group of people so that they have a richer experience.
And it's not just the residencies, but the whole Mark Morris Dance Center in Brooklyn and the school. The same philosophy is behind your whole base of activity.
You know, when I grew up in Seattle and I didn't go to conservatory, I went to a dancing school. And that's where I studied Spanish dance and ballet and a whole bunch of other things. But it was a community center, and it was a fun place to go and learn how to dance, and that's what we've set up in Fort Greene, Brooklyn.
Yeah, we've got over 1,000 kids that come to study at the dance center every week, and it really is built on Mark's vision and his experience as a child. And people come and try things, and basically, I mean, it encouraged them to be better human beings. I mean, involvement in and exposure to the arts makes us better people. I mean, I think that's been proven over and over again. So.
And again, live music for every single class, even if you're 5 years old.
There's Seriously.
A drummer or a pianist or someone singing. It's fabulous, yeah.
And how often do the kids get to see Mark Morris?
Well, in the elevator every day. They say, oh, you're Mark Morris. That's the name of the building. I say, it's not no coincidence.
We also do free showings for all the kids in our school and our outreach programs. We do extensive programs in the public schools in Brooklyn and for Parkinson's groups and other city residents.
And we did, by the way, have a chat with Kate Cooper and Whitney Havice involved in the Dance for Parkinson's program, who I think it's once a month at the dance department at the Krannert Center, at the University of Illinois in the Krannert Center. That offers one of those programs. Bridget Lee Kalf is with us. It's usually 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, first Saturday, I think.
Well, they're 10:30 on Friday mornings.
10:30 Friday mornings.
There is one this week at 10:30 a.m. While we have the company here in residency,
sure.
We, of course, wanted to take that opportunity since they have been the foundation of this program. So 10:30 a.m. Everyone in the community is welcome. We are particularly affiliated with the support group from Carle Hospital, the Unity Group. But anyone who is interested in getting involved in this program should contact us at the center. Just call the ticket office line, 333-6282.
And you don't have to have Parkinson's disease to come.
No, and it's also a group for people who are supporting those with Parkinson's mm-hmm. disease. So it's a resource for those folks as well.
Or of any of a number of other
Anyone that has
physically challenging
mobility issues,
can
certainly benefit from this type of a program that really is celebrating the abilities of the people who are challenged with these diseases.
So that's 10:30 tomorrow morning.
That's right.
At the Krannert Center. And the performance is again Friday and Saturday night at 7:30, the Mark Morris Dance Group. A set of three pieces to three different musical works. And it has really been a privilege and a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to next year and try to have another chat, I hope.
Sure.
And here, coming up, is a conversation with J. Scott Ferguson, who is director of the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, who are about to head off on a tour across the country. They're performing Saturday night in Peoria. Here, meanwhile, is the final movement of the opening piece on Mark Morris's concerts, which is the Cello Sonata No. 4 by Ludwig von Beethoven. In this performance, we have cellist Miklos Perenyi and pianist András Schiff. It's live and local on FM 90.9. My guest for this portion of Live and Local is Scott Ferguson, who is the conductor of the Collegiate Choir at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. And on Saturday in Peoria, they're giving what they're calling a pre-tour concert because they're about to launch on a tour of various places, not just in the Midwest, but also in the South, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, Tennessee, and Alabama even, and then eventually coming back to Bloomington on the 23rd to give a closeout concert there, but wanted to give folks a chance to hear from him before they embark on this. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your history with the choir? How long have you been at Illinois Wesleyan?
This is my 14th year.
Wow.
Actually, it's amazing how fast time has gone. I haven't been, before I came here, I didn't stay at any place for more than 4 years, but I found that this was the place that I love greatly, and I started a family here, and my wife works at Wesleyan as well, so we're pretty well settled in.
And what did you love about the institution what did you know or think you knew about the institution before you got here, and what about it made you want to stay once you got here?
Yeah, well, I didn't know much about it at all, because at the time I was working at the Conservatory of Music in Bratislava in the Slovak Republic, which is where I met my wife, and we married there and spent the next year there, and then decided that if we wanted to visit both families, we probably would need a salary from the States to do that.
Okay, well, I have to interrupt and ask, how did you end up in Bratislava?
That was the product of a concert when I was working at a different institution. We sang there, and I spoke with the vice director after the concert, and she asked me if I would be interested in a possible position, and I went back to Hope College, and then I went through the tenure process, and then I found myself being single and it is a wonderful place. I had a great time there, but I was itching to move on, And I called her up, and I had received tenure and everything was okay, but then I decided that this was an experience I just couldn't refuse. So I left single and came back married. I'd planned to spend however many years I would like to there, but once we were together, we decided that probably best to come here if we could find a place to work together. And that's the interesting thing. People said, oh, you'll never find a place like that. And when I was here for the interview, we were discussing various topics at dinner, and turns out that Illinois Wesleyan needed a coordinator of the accompanying program. And I said, well, fancy that. That's what my wife was doing at the conservatory in Slovakia. So they ended up getting two for one.
And how is your, what is the language? Slovakian?
Slovak. Right.
And how is your Slovak?
It's pretty good, depending on what we discuss. I don't know if I would try politics, but it's been quite a few years, and it feels like rather second nature, again, depending on what we talk about. And it's, the grammar is very difficult, so I make errors all the time. But they know what I'm saying.
And I'm sure she corrects you.
It's okay, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're sort of making me wonder what would have happened had I taken up what was kind of an offer when I was on a workshop in the Czech Republic to study at one of the conservatories there for postgraduate work, and I didn't do it.
We had a great time. I was the opera director and one of the choral directors and taught orchestral clef reading, score reading. They had a very different system there, so it was a great experience, and learned to sing chant. It was a lot of things. It was just really, really great. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. We go back every summer, so our kids are bilingual, and it's a lot of fun.
And so you ended up at Illinois Wesleyan,
right?
And what did you find that made you stay?
Yeah, it's just a fantastic school. The students are bright and they're motivated. We have a wonderful choral program, and for our family, it's been a perfect fit. And it's been really wonderful. The choral program has been growing continuously, and we finally got a second position. Dr. Brian Russell joined us last year. This year is his first year teaching the university choir and music education courses, so that helps quite a bit.
A second position meaning that you had been conducting
everything
there
was? I had been doing everything myself, right.
Which is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. But and enjoyable, very enjoyable.
So the choral program now is what choirs?
We have collegiate choir, the touring choir, and university choir, which is the, I wouldn't say second tier, but it involves a larger number of students from around the campus, and they perform throughout the year on campus, and the smaller chamber singers. And we have two a cappella student-run groups. Suspended is the male vocal ensemble, and A Touch of Class is the women's ensemble.
And a chapel choir as well?
Yes, there is the student-run choir that sings in the Wednesday morning chapel services as well.
My eyes went to that just because
right.
When I was at Northwestern, I sang in the chapel choir.
Right.
And at least at the time, that was the premier choir on campus.
Uh-huh.
I think the director of choral music might have disputed that, but that's what that's what everybody else said,
right.
And it was a lot of fun to sing in. So the collegiate choir is made up of whom?
Well, it depends. As the voices deepen, the number of music majors decreases. As you might expect, most of the sopranos are some sort of music major, and a fair number of the altos, and I would say probably half or so of the men, but we have students from all academic disciplines from around the campus involved in the choir as well. So all ensembles are open to everybody around the campus.
And is Wesleyan an exclusively undergraduate school?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and this particular ensemble not open to community members?
No.
So it is truly a collegiate choir.
Yes, correct.
And you do these tours how often?
Every year we tour during spring break.
Wow.
And they give up their spring break for these tours, and we have a wonderful time.
So that that suggests they need some dedication to give up party time.
Absolutely, yes. And every 4 years, in 2000, we started doing an international tour every 4 years. So our next tour of that nature will be in 2012 to Germany.
And why tour?
For a number of reasons. First of all, it certainly gets the name of the school out. For recruiting purposes, next year we'll do a primarily Illinois and Wisconsin tour, a lot of Chicago area concerts, That's our main base, of course, so we want to try to do concerts there. It's the experience also of being together. Being together on a bus for a week is a challenge for everybody. But what happens when students are together for that long and perform music repeatedly is quite astounding. The music changes, they change, they learn so much more about the music that we sing. And it's all very challenging music, and it's a great experience for them to keep discovering more about the music as we perform it.
You're listening to a conversation with J. Scott Ferguson, who is director of the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, who are performing Saturday evening at 7:30 at, where is the name of the church? I have lost it on my piece of paper here. I will find that for you. Here is the IWU Collegiate Choir in music by Jean Mouton, a setting of the Ave Maria, on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The Collegiate Choir from Illinois Wesleyan University, directed by J. Scott Ferguson, in the Ave Maria of Jean Mouton here on WILL. FM and HD Urbana, it's live and local, and you can hear the Collegiate Choir Saturday night at 7:30 in Peoria at the Cathedral of St. Mary of the Immaculate Conception. That's their pre-tour concert, and they're about to launch a national tour, really, all across the country for the next couple of weeks, and they'll be back with another concert on the 23rd of March in their hometown of Bloomington. Our broadcast today on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karastan Broadloom and Rug dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. Here's the rest of my conversation with Scott Ferguson. The program you're taking on this particular tour is incredibly varied. What was your thinking behind it?
Well, creating the tour program is one of my main concerns during the previous spring and the previous summer. And it takes me a long time before I find the right combinations of pieces. We try to do a variety of styles, from Renaissance through the contemporary era. We perform a commissioned work every year. We maintain the oldest collegiate choral commission series in the country, started back in early 50s by Lloyd Fauch when he was conducting here. So that work presents a piece that I need to find other pieces to go with, and we don't know that until probably October, November of the current year. So I try to start programs with some Renaissance motets. Learning to sing Renaissance motets, it teaches so much to the students about vocal development and line and phrasing. And it's in many times in Latin, and that's a wonderful language to sing in. And we try to do a balance of music from the Baroque, Romantic, contemporary eras. This year, however, it just happened that music is strictly from the Renaissance and the contemporary eras.
Wow, you skip everything in between. Yeah, why did you decide that?
Well, it's just the way it happened. The pieces that felt like they would fit together, and knowing the choir, I wanted to do the Hinastera Lamentations of Jeremiah for many years, and was waiting for the choir that I thought could do it. And the choir has a beautiful lyric quality, and the Reincarnations of Samuel Barber were pieces I'd done about 10 years ago, and they're extremely expressive compositions and very challenging but wonderfully fun to sing. And it just seemed like it was the right time for these pieces too. And one by one, the pieces just sort of fit in. And I always try, Bach and Brahms are two of the great choral composers, of course. And next year we'll get back to either Bach or Brahms. Almost every year we do a motet by either Bach or Brahms. But this year it just worked out this way. And I fumbled with this program for quite a while and moved things around. I had planned a Brahms motet, actually, initially, Warum ist das Licht gegeben? But it, again, just knowing the choir, it just felt like it was time for the other pieces. And sometimes a piece will be suggested to me, and we'll see if it fits in, and that's the way this program came about. We have some Swedish pieces and a contemporary Danish piece and two pieces by our commission composer, actually.
And who is that?
Sidney Guillaume. He wrote a wonderful, lengthy piece, text by his father, who writes most of his texts, sung in French, a sacred composition. And he's very well known these days for his Haitian Creole ethnic compositions. And we are doing one that is, I've already heard it three times this year by other choirs, a Trois Tambours, so that's making the rounds. So we initially had put those pieces together. I had asked him to write a piece in Haitian Creole, and then he heard the choir's recordings, and he liked the lyric quality of the sound and thought that it would be fun to write a slower, more sustained piece on a sacred text. So I said, well, if you're going to write a new one, of that sort, we'll go ahead and do one of the pieces you already have. So that's how that turned out.
Fair enough. So you've suggested a few times here that the sound of the choir this year lends itself to this particular program, mm-hmm. which suggests that, in fact, the sound does change every year.
To a certain extent, yeah. It depends. If I know that I've got a lot of low basses coming back, which is not too frequent at the undergraduate level, but if I know enough of the makeup from the previous spring, it'll give me a clue as to what kind of pieces. Now, of course, this choir would do a Bach motet or a Brahms motet beautifully. Excuse me. It's just that the other pieces that are on the program just sort of made themselves known to me, as it were, and they all seem to fit in very well.
Well, you referred to the lyrical quality of this year's choir, mm-hmm. especially.
Yes, I noticed that especially on the Christmas program, how well the voices work together. And that's why I didn't make the decision about the Barber until early this spring, in the spring semester. So then that made a big change in the program, and it very well could have been a Bach or a Brahms motet and the end of the first half. But they enjoyed the Hinostera Lamentations so much that we decided we'd keep them for tour and then do the Barber.
Barber's wonderful piece is Reincarnations.
Yes.
And I remember singing that in a group in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
A lot of years ago by now. I can't believe you talk about the passage of time.
All right.
Well, I wish you the best of luck on the tour, and we'll try to talk to you when you come back and find out what it was all like and maybe hear a recording or two from the tour as well.
It'd be my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
J. Scott Ferguson, conductor of the Collegiate Choir at Illinois Wesleyan University, who are kicking off their tour with a pre-tour concert, this Saturday evening at 7:30 at St. Mary's Church in St. Mary's Cathedral in Peoria. Again, that concert at 7:30. On tomorrow's Live and Local, we will have live in our studio some members of a group that calls itself Gloria Deluxe, featuring lead singer Cynthia Hopkins, who plays both accordion and guitar. She's bringing in a few of her colleagues during the show tomorrow from 12 to 1. She'll be giving the Afterglow performances Friday and Saturday night at the Krannert Center, starting at 10 o'clock or so in the lobby after the Mark Morris performances and other things going on at the Krannert Center this weekend as well. I'm sorry we won't have time for much of a calendar, right, or any calendar beyond those things I mentioned right now. I do need to give you a weather forecast, which I will do right now. It's going to be mostly sunny this afternoon, the high 43. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 22. Tomorrow, a sunny sky with a high of 46. And Saturday's outlook is for a mostly sunny day with a high of 48. We're at 44 now. It's 12:59. We have news headlines in just a couple of minutes from NPR, and Julie Amacher has classical music for you at 106. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local, and I hope you'll join me again tomorrow from 12 to 1. Our program today is made possible with support from the Music Shop and Pro Sound Center, now located at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign. The Music Shop specializes in the sales and rental of band and orchestra instruments, digital keyboards, guitars, amps, and drums, along with a wide variety of sheet music. Here once again, the Illinois Wesleyan Collegiate Chorale, led by Scott Ferguson. This is music by Stephen Paulus called All Things Are Passing.